Welcome to this talk from the Canando Zen Meditation Center. Located in Mountain View, California, Canando's meditation practice is open to the public. For more information or to get in touch with us, you can visit our website at canando.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.
I knew that my talk was going to fall on the day after the election, a contest between two candidates who could not have been more different. So I wrote a talk about dealing with loss and grief, not because I could foresee the outcome of this election, because in our human lives, we can't skate by without encountering loss and grief. Many of us are dealing right now with emotions of grief, disbelief, and fear for the future of our democracy, our allies, and our world. We'll need to turn our emotions into helpful actions in the next few years, and maybe beyond just a few years. We'll need to be ready to advocate and work for a culture of respect, kindness, and inclusion. We'll need to be ready to stand up for healing the earth and oceans, ready to push back against what may be a deeply autocratic power structure. I had a vivid personal encounter with loss 24 years ago when my then husband died. I was alone and going through terrible depression and the agony of being separated from the person who'd brought so much happiness to my life. The upheaval and trauma of loss and grief generated tumultuous dreams and nightmares for me during many of those nights. And so I would keep a notebook and a pen on my bedside table so I could note down anything that came to me in dreams that might be a message from him or about him in my dreams. I desperately hoped for a message from him to say that he was okay, safe, and that he heard my many expressions of love and gratitude for the life we had shared together. Every morning I checked my notepad to see if something interesting had been scribbled by me in a half-aware, half-asleep state, preferably some words that would reassure me that he was okay, that he heard my messages to him. But aside from some disjointed or illegible notes, there was really nothing you could call a message. Then one morning I awoke to see a sentence written on the pad that I had apparently written while either partly or entirely asleep, as I had no memory of writing it. The words of that message have remained with me as a guiding teaching over the years, a gift that I think may have helped inspire my eventual interest in Buddhist meditation. The message said, "In this universe of love, we are not separate." However I chose to understand this teaching then, and it expanded over time, I realize now that the message was a variant of the Buddha's understanding and teaching to us. We are all born. We experience old age, sickness, and death. By following the way, we may gain understanding, and we're all interconnected, not separate. The practice can strengthen and at the same time soften us, create equanimity about the transience of life. Life tends to guide us towards what we most need to understand. Maybe the separation we feel between ourselves and other people and from all the myriad beings is just an illusion and a misunderstanding. We're capable of feeling care, love, and compassion towards other people, also towards animals, birds, and plants. We feel great joy in the beauty and exuberance of nature and the natural world, because really, We aren't separate from life and the world. Not separate. I wasn't prepared back then to see my life in the context of that teaching. But on a deep level, I felt encouraged to continue living and seeking purpose and joy in my life. Slowly, healing began to occur. And eventually, I found love again with someone who's sitting right here, Umar. Slowly, healing began to occur. Together, we began this practice at Canon Do. The practice gives all of us, a path towards equanimity and courage. It's a difficult moment in the life of our nation and the world right now. But I'd like to suggest to you that meditation is the antidote to panic. In the noise, shock, and grief of this moment, we need to come together with our friends, families, and Sangha to heal and to cope with what will unfold in the coming years. And we know that it's not going to be easy. I think we all aspire to do whatever can be done to help preserve our democracy and protect our world. Helping and protecting the world is an important part of the Buddha's way. Let's all be ready to join with others in the years ahead to advocate for sanity, for caring for others, including others, helping our nation and our world. And as a side note, just this morning I learned that Carolina Sturgeon's husband Jason had passed away. Jason was a very kind, gentle man with a ready smile. My heart goes out to you, Carolina. I don't know if you're on this call. And I hope your journey through this sad loss may be eased by Sangha and your long devotion to practice. So that is my Dharma talk, post-election Dharma talk, blues talk. And if any of you have comments or questions, please feel free to raise your hand. Hi, Dave. Yes.
No, I was just raising my hand about whether I felt the post-election Dharma talk news. Actually, I do have one observation. I've been reading an interesting book recently. I mean, obviously, one of the big questions right now, you know, the post-election Dharma talk is, what's the relationship between our practice and the experience of going through this election? I've been reading an interesting book that tries to deal with the question of how it is that the American evangelical community has become so enamored of Donald Trump when he is so far from their ideal of what their practice should mean. It's a very interesting book. And the thing that I find so interesting about it is that the author grapples in a very deep way with this question, but not from outside the bounds of evangelical practice. The author is, in fact, deeply Christian and the son of an evangelical minister. And so it's very interesting to see this sort of inside look at how it is that, in their case, their Christian practice and their politics do and don't align with each other. I mean, I must admit that I find the whole thing of this relationship between evangelicals and Donald Trump to be very puzzling. And this book is helping me to at least understand the more complicated dynamics inside that whole interaction.
Yeah, that would be very interesting to.
What is the book called?
What's the title of the book, Dave?
The title of the book is The Kingdom, the Power, and the Glory. Easy to remember.
Yeah.
I can't remember the author's name right off the top of my head, but.
Yeah. Yes. Ernie has a question.
Not so much a question. I just wanted to make sure I had your phrase correctly. It was in this universe of love, we are not separate.
Correct, exactly right.
Good.
Yeah.
My comment and suggestion, stop looking on the Republican Party and what they do so much and focus on something good. Find a dog shelter, save a puppy. Find somebody in need, help him, study, read a good book, laugh and talk with your friends. Ignore Republicans, just find positive and bring it to the world. Because the more we talk about it, the more everybody feels anxious, the more we hear bad news. So look for something good. It's just my peace of mind. I'm really, first time, sorry if I take too much.
No, that's okay. You have expressed that very well. I mean, I think we all would love to be able to go back to a normal, outlook on life. But, you know, we can see the reality of what's happened before. We've lived under a Trump administration. We watched him try to steal an election. And, you know, we've heard him say that he's going to be a dictator on day one. And we feel like this country, you know, we value this country because we have freedom.
What I was trying to say, I spent under bombs, air alerts, like machine guns, and I found a way to live happy life.
Oh,
right?
I
Although,
think, I understand.
I'm not saying that Trump is good. I'm saying, like, if you look really under those terrible circumstances for happy life, you can find it, right? Mm-hmm. I honestly don't believe if every day we sit and discuss Trump and everything bad, mm-hmm. it will make world better. If we avoid it and just focus on something good, it will make world better. Because mm-hmm. if, like, he already obtained too much real estate in our heads, mm-hmm. why should we give him more real estate in our head? Why should he influence our mental health even more, although he takes too much? I don't want to give him any small inch of my headspace more. He already got too much. I even want him out of my head, out of my life, out of my memory.
I think most of us can relate to what you're saying. Does anybody else want to speak to that? Yes.
My family is very evangelical Christian. I grew up in this kind of system. So I've seen it from the inside. And when the Jim Jones Guyana tragedy happened, I think I was about 14 in high school, and it had a big effect on me because I was raised in a Pentecostal church, this exact same denomination, and I recognized a lot of the same behaviors. And I had a feeling like, oh, I'm in a cult. Like, not exactly a cult, but there were similarities. And I think that's what the paradigm is with the people who support this person. I don't like to say his name.
I appreciate it.
And I think if there is such a thing as a demon, I think he's a demon. I'm not saying he is, I'm saying that's what we're dealing with, that sort of thing. And he's hypnotized tens of millions of people, and they're dangerous. They're dangerous to themselves and others, and they're blind. And I have a tremendous amount of anger. I don't think they deserve respect and a place in society. I think they should be shunned because of their actions. And we just chanted about loving kindness and wishing happiness for everyone. Great. But at the same time, there are limits to human decency and what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. And if people act like this, then they, in my view, they don't have a place in civilized society. I'm not sure what to do about this, but it all affects us all differently. You know, I'm a white male living in California. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to suffer direct consequences of this. Some people will have their families torn apart and deported and all this stuff. And I don't remember your name.
Julian. Yes.
Julius.
Yes.
Thank you, and welcome here. And I can appreciate your comment, but on the other hand, I can find personal peace and happiness and focus on my work and my family and my friends and my life, but we have compassion for people who are suffering more directly. And it's hard to be happy in the face of suffering. And I'm sure you've seen more than your share of it, but I'm not sure I'm able to just turn away. It's like watching a car crash. It's hard to turn away. Anyway, that's my comments.
Thanks so much, Richard.
If anybody wants to comment on that is welcome.
Yeah. What concerns me about all this is the lack of integrity and character that has arisen. And you know, I've spent the last year and a half with a gentleman in our dog park. You know, we go to the dog park every morning, play with the dogs. And never had the kind of conversation I'd had with him this morning. And this morning he walks up, and within minutes, I'm told that Putin is the greatest leader in the world, that he's never killed anyone, that happy Ukraine deserves to be given back, that Biden is the one that allowed all of the wars to happen. And oh, by the way, they're going to do it again. And I'm like, well, what are they going to do? Well, they're going to release COVID again. And I'm like, who is they? The Democrats. Right?
Amazing.
And that was my first 10 minutes at 6 a.m. this morning.
Head spinning.
And it is head spinning. And what I don't understand, and I can't have a conversation with that. It didn't ask for it. And one cannot argue with that because there aren't... So what do you do? And I'm finding it's not one person. I have probably had 5 of those conversations today alone. From people that were friends, or I thought they were, and from all over the country. And I'm curious, like, what do you do when 60-70% of the people you thought would even have a civil conversation are incapable of having a civil conversation?
So when he brings that Biden starts this war and they're about to release COVID, you said, like, yes. And those alien Jews, Zionists, is about to take over. I know there is a good place under the rock. We can hide it. At 6 p.m., go under rock because Zionist Jew is around the corner.
Yeah.
They will eat your kids alive. Just enjoy this conversation with those people. Just accelerate it. Yeah, I know. There is a fact. So I saw UFO flying and Zionist Jew was dancing around it, right? So, and they was planning, like, Hare Krishna, let's have all the money, eat the American kids. And it's a fact, they're together with Mexicans. What we do, we go under the rock, let's dig the trenches, you know. Just enjoy. So this is my advice.
All right, sounds fair enough.
You cannot resist it or overcome, but you can enjoy it.
Yeah. Well, probably going to last on up here on Facebook a week later, just that very thing. Everybody believing it.
Yeah.
Well, I also have one small comment. After, in my household, after 10 p.m., everybody is super depressed. I open page with memes about politics, and I open memes, and the first time I saw my host smiling in a couple of days because I showed him memes about Trump, and he finally laughed. Again, I cannot take, it's really hard to take a Trump down at this point, but I can make my host smile by showing him memes and sharing those memes with you. I prefer to make people smile rather than make them sad about talking about things that potentially could happen. But memes help. Sorry again for taking too much time.
Okay, Julius, thank you.
But my question to you though is how do you stand in that situation, or do you just walk away, or what's the...
I don't know. I mean, how many people have had have real experience of that before this whole thing occurred? I've never...
Well, and again, my perspective on this is somehow that behavior, that kind of conversation, is now acceptable.
Yeah.
Right. Whereas before, it would be under, it wouldn't be as open or it'd be more restrained. But now, kind of anything goes.
Would anybody?
I would think that normally we operate. A person who's insane, a person who's unable to recognize reality. Then I think you could just relieve yourself of the obligation and walk away, because why subject yourself to craziness?
Yeah,
and if they're offended by that, then
The problem is it's my morning dog park group. Right? It's like I have to leave my group.
Okay. Those people, again, they take too much real estate in my head by making those comments. He already owns too much real estate. And in Ukraine, we stand our ground for every inch of our land. Protect every inch of your headspace. Avoid this time and this person. Because no matter what you do, just avoid this timing. So we banned those people in the groups because there was like many groups related to the work, to the life, to environment. I just quit them. And many Ukrainians quit, or just other groups was just those people were banned. So avoid it, because every time when you encounter them and the longer conversation goes without you accelerating to the ridiculous, the more real estate in your head they own. And you don't want to give it to them. Sorry for this. It's just systems that works for me, and it's the same for you.
Okay, thanks for your input on that.
For me, having lost over a year ago my son, sometimes we just have to accept what is. Well, that's the reality. And when we rail against it and fight against it, that's when we suffer. So it is accepting it. And Julian's kind of saying that you have to be with what is, right?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I'm thinking about is, you know, we live in a bubble here in California, and we really don't understand how other people feel. And I agree, they've been brainwashed watching Fox News, they've been filled with hate and fear, and it's like being in a cult. I agree with Richard. But, you know, we have to understand that. I think by dividing and creating more ill will and calling them stupid and they don't know what they're saying, and I think that makes it worse. And I think we have to look at ourselves. What have we done from our side not to include people with many different views? And then Dave brought up the book he's read. The other day I heard about, it was a program about communication and how difficult it is for people who have married, who one is a Republican, one is a Democrat. And they've been able over the years to talk to each other. And many people now cannot talk to each other, married people who have been married for 30 years. So they talked about this publication called Tangle. Mm. Do you know about that?
I heard about it.
What is it called?
It's called Tangle.
Tangle.
And it's a publication that thoroughly researches both the point of view from the left and the point of view from the right. And then the editor researches deeply whatever the issue is, and then puts out the facts and comes to a conclusion. This couple could not talk to each other. The husband was absolutely convinced that the election was stolen, that Biden stole the election, the Democrats stole the election. After they started reading this publication and he read the whole point of view, right and left, and the research and the conclusion, he was convinced, no, the election was not stolen. So I think there's a pathway for us to look at both sides of issues, and then let's then try to talk about what the facts are. And,
you know, wouldn't it be good if we did that? But we don't. We're in little separate silos.
Exactly.
And that's the problem. Yes, Ernie.
I think I heard the same program, and I ended up subscribing to Tangle, which you get every week. It comes every day in your inbox. The reason why it's so successful is because it purposely works very hard to talk to each group in a very sympathetic way. So it doesn't just say, here are the facts, and you know, buy them. If you don't buy these, you're stupid. They'll say something like, you know, I can understand the impulse to want to believe this. And I actually love conspiracy theories myself. And when I first heard about the election, I thought, boy, what, as a journalist, what a great story this would be. And so I actually started looking into it, and here's the things that people say about it. And then he goes into great detail on In and Out. And there were actually a couple of Trump people that said that after reading that for a few months and coming to trust the guy, they said, I gave up on Trump. As a matter of fact, I decided that I really disliked him because he had made me a fool. But it was the trust that he had established first. Because the facts, they had read all the facts before, mm-hmm. but they were papers that they didn't trust.
Yeah.
This they did.
Yeah, this is really true. This is, part of what, this is part of what has driven us apart in this country, where we're getting our news from different outlets and believing it. And then we're not able to converse with each other in a civil way, mm-hmm. Because we have these entrenched views. So this is why we're here, where we are in this country today.
So when you were speaking earlier, I'm sorry, I forgot your name.
Julius,
right. My initial thought was, is there room for grief? Because your response seems to be very kind of like, just to put it out of your mind. But for a lot of us, there's just a natural kind of automatic emotional response. And grief is the process of going through, processing that emotion, right? And I think that, when we simply avoid something that does bring up emotions, rather than processing the emotion, it can be a type of bypassing that can kind of come to haunt us later on. Now, I'm saying this, but at the same time recognizing that you've been through stuff that I can't imagine ever getting through, and you've managed to survive by living this philosophy. So on the one hand, I feel like respect for you, and on the other hand, I feel like, well, we aren't in a war zone, so I think maybe if I were in a war zone, I might go to that extreme of, using more avoidance tactics to keep myself sane. But if we're just living in our normal life, and this stuff is happening, I think ultimately acceptance rather than avoidance is ultimately necessary, I think. And that means, just being willing to confront reality, to look at it in the face, allow your natural emotions to arise in response to it, give yourself time and space to process those feelings, so that they don't come to haunt you later. And once you've processed them, then you have some clarity of mind to show up authentically, with other people, whether they're people who are on your team, or the people who aren't. And from that state of mind, that presence, I think you can kind of give more compassion and empathy and
I have a small comment. I have a friend. He was Russian, right?
Yeah.
Friend was Ukrainian. He was like on a mission. He got stabbed on the mine. He exploded. I got like PTSD, but he died. I think I still have part of his skull in my arm. Doesn't really matter. But I also have a friend from Russia, and he was like, we needed to start this war because like you neo-Nazi. Neo-Nazi led by Zionistic Jew, pro-LGBT Easterns, and those three doesn't sit together, was about to invade us and like take our family values because you're LGBT, neo-Nazi, pro-Zionistic, and like those three groups doesn't exist. And I was trying to, make my head around how those ideas live in his head. Because it's like you cannot put those three groups together. And saying this is the reason of Russian invasion doesn't make sense. And my friend exploded and he died because, you think you're like those three types together and whatever. So, what I was trying to say, to look to positive, it's a skill.
Yeah.
Here I propose a small experiment, right? Look around the room and look for everything yellow that you can find, just for a couple of seconds.
Everything.
Now,
close. What?
Yellow, everything yellow. Okay. Just every yellow object you can see. Now, close your eyes for a second and say me what black was in the room. Now, open your eyes. And now you can see a lot of black objects, right? But when you were thinking about them, right, for a second it was like, oh no, there was not so much black, because you were looking for yellow, right? You can develop skill for looking for good and then seeing it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when and you see it constantly now. Now you see everything black, like the iron was in the black, those cushions are black, but you didn't notice it when you was looking for black, but it was here all the time. Those positive things are still there, even like in like even when hell comes to earth, literally, like mines, explosion, rust, guts, you can still find happiness. We were sitting in the trenches and we was joking jokes and making sceneries with faces, like explosion happening, like and people laughing, right? It's living nightmare on earth, like hell, skies falling down, literally because explosion ground. But we were looking for something positive in this situation and was finding. Again, you can develop and improve the skill. It's not easy. It's simple to say for me, right?
Yeah.
So just look for something good. It's hard skill to develop, but it's a simple thing to do that can drastically improve your life, your surrounding, and everybody else.
Mm.
Another exercise that sort of helps me mentally, I was like, when he said like this pro-Zionist neo-Nazis, pro-LGBT invasion of family values of Russia, and Putin like saved all Russian people by sending those rockets to Ukraine, what I tried to do, show compassion to this person and really understand. I know it's really complicated mental gymnastics to understand those people. It's really like, you know, it's another level of mental tricks. But he's in Russia, he sees all those news, some of his friends support Putin, some of his mother supports it, and his mother will always take care of him, right? Maybe some of his friends are in the military, and he was good guys, he was having some fun time. He cannot say like, oh, those old people around me could not be just bad and evil. This is a guy who's in the army, he just like to march and train, and he joined Mario just to train even more, right? He's my friend. Like, if you can do this mental gymnastics and really find compassion inside of you, you would stop having so much negative. What
mm-hmm.
she said, that we might to demonize Trump, he's a buffoon, but he's not pure evil. Putin is evil. Like, I know what evil looks like, right? He's just buffoon who is really just. But if you find compassion, your life will become better.
Yeah.
You would not be so anxious and depressed, and life of people around you would become better. It's simple exercise, but it's really, really, really hard to do, but it can improve our life. It's skill that takes time, like meditation takes a lot of time. It's simple thing, just sit and do nothing, right? But it's hard skill to develop. Yeah, sorry for taking too much time.
A couple of observations. I hadn't heard of Tango before, and I definitely want to look into that. But along those same lines, one of the things that is often discussed as a sort of catalyst for all of the polarization and distrust and anger in politics these days is the internet and algorithms, and in particular, the algorithms, whether they're AI or just coded out algorithms that are designed to keep people stuck to these social media websites and so forth by basically making them angry, and that this is such a polarizing effect. And in the context of that, it was very interesting to see in the latest issue of Science magazine, there's actually a research paper that talks about somebody who made an AI agent that was specifically designed as a mediator between people with extreme opposing opinions, trying to help them find common ground so they could at least talk to each other. I'm not sure that AI is the answer to all of this, but just the idea that it is possible, and they had, you know, data from their experiments that showed that it is possible to discover common ground that helps people to at least not see each other as sort of demonized or total idiots or insane. And along that same line about trying to understand, you know, how could people possibly believe these horrible, stupid things? They must be total idiots. There's a very, very interesting book that I've just started reading by one of my favorite authors, a fellow named Michael Shermer, who some of you may be familiar with. Shermer's latest book is simply called Conspiracy. And it's not just a run-of-the-mill enumeration of all the various crazy conspiracies around and how much the people on opposite sides despise each other. It's a very, very deep dive into the evolutionary cognitive psychology of why people are vulnerable to believing in conspiracies. It's a very, very interesting book, and it's a very deep dive into the evolutionary psychology of the whole thing. So if you're interested in that sort of point of view of trying to get that kind of an understanding of how in the world tens of millions of people can believe this stuff, well, I recommend that book very highly. Michael Shermer, and the book is called Conspiracy.
Thanks, Dave. Sounds like a good recommendation. We have somebody raising your hand. I don't have your name.
Yeah, it's Lourdes.
Oh, Lourdes, hi.
Yes, hi. Hi. Well, I just wanted to mention that, you know, this has been a very harsh experience for many people. But I just wanted to say that we know people who, in terms of politics, they're very different from us. But if we try to keep politics out of a relationship, we begin to see each other and respect each other. And the reason I say this is because I have a patient who's very much for Trump. And I thought, well, he's not going to like me because I'm Mexican, you know. But we've become good friends and we respect each other as long as we don't touch the topic of politics, because I cannot change him. I don't want to change him, and he's not going to change me. So if we go to the common interest and human beings, I think we can start opening hearts and creating a new atmosphere.
Yeah, thanks, Lourdes.
You're welcome.
Does anybody else have something? Martha wanted to speak.
My cousin lives in mostly red Missouri. Mm-hmm. And her father was a Lutheran minister. And I know his views. He was very liberal, and I assume she was the same way, and I think she is. But one time, I was presuming that she was liberal, and I wanted to start talking politics. We were out there for a wedding or something, and she cut me off, and she said, "We don't talk about politics." And I later on decided that's how these small towns get along. They just, you know, they know each other on a certain level, and they know what each other's politics are, and you don't stick a needle in to rile them up at all.
Right.
Anyway, that's all I wanted to say. And also, we got what we deserved as a nation, and if you're counting votes, this was sort of the will of the people, what happened yesterday.
Won a popular vote.
That's disheartening.
Yes, it is.
Yes, it is, of course.
But it wasn't stolen.
No.
I know we've, all of us have shared a lot of stuff. It seems to me what Julius is saying is like, it's an echo chamber. If we keep yelling into the echo chamber, it just comes back.
Yeah.
You know? So, number one is that. And number two is Freud had a theory about scaring people and then you could heal them. So his nephew, Edward Bernays, picked up that theory, and Freud had dropped that theory. Edward Bernays picked the theory up and he used it in marketing. So if you go in and poke at people's insecurities, it's very simple. Go and poke at people's insecurities enough to scare them, you can actually sell them anything. And this is what it comes down to. Just like him, I I didn't myself go through war, but my father was in the war and he became disabled to the point from where I think I was three and started out at the age of three, taking care of him slowly and steadily till the age of 25, where I was feeding him by hand, getting him to stand up and walk. He was mentally and physically disabled. So, for me, the war never ended. It was just like it went on for me for like 25 years, 23 years of my life, or 22 years of my life. Even when I came here, I would hear him. Sometimes when I would call, my mom would talk to me. But, even in those times, there was enough, where I could look into his eyes and find some happiness. We could talk about things and we would joke about things. And most of the time, he did not want to be in the situation. It was because of him that I started listening more to music, because he would always have music on, because he was in so much mental anguish that it would just so go from one station, radio, from this radio station to that radio station, put on if people still remember, cassettes. We would put on cassettes for him. It would just like, it was just this idea of not letting your external circumstances bring you down, So that is very important to remember, that, whatever you do, sometimes I wish I could just go and there was a switch and I would turn off the electricity for the whole world. So everybody would go outside and computers and cell phones would stop working for a while. So people would actually get to see each other and for who we are, that would be nice. But it's, I think one of the important things is to realize that there are echo chambers, realize that people are afraid, realize people are lonely. And the other thing is also realizing that beyond politics is another human being. When we come to that understanding, then we can really get to get in touch with each other. And that's what our practice brings us back to constantly, that we have to see each other as being one with each other and not getting too caught up in, you're left and you're right, or you're up, you're down, you're this way, you're that. I think it's very important to come back to this point that we are here, we're doing this together, we're in it together, we will get through this too, One of the things that our Heart Sutra says, no eyes, no ears, no mind, no body. But I've always interpreted that as this too shall pass. So this too shall pass. Yeah. So we just have to take care of ourselves and take care of our loved ones and be with each other. That's the best thing we can do.
And this is, life is suffering.
Life is
and
suffering.
And generosity is one of the first, is the first paramita, what you should strive for.
I would quote Suzuki Roshi on this. Student asking, why is there so much crying and suffering in the world? Suzuki Roshi answered, no reason.
I think we also have to remember how young our country is.
Yes.
Think about that. Our country is really, really young. And this is just part of the process that countries go through. And we'll get through it.
I know we'll get through it. That doesn't mean that we have to be content with it.
No.
It was nice to share, and it's also nice to hear everyone's comments, giving more perspective, different points of view, including Ian's. So thank you.
Yeah, thank you all for, for entering into the discussion, because I think that you know, in a situation like this, when we can talk with it with other people about it, we just sort of get it off our chest, and you know, we get you know, a slightly different perspective, and it helps a lot.
But it is nice that we're all generally thinking the same way.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
As long as none of those people.
Well, as long as, you know, I mean, even if there were people who disagreed with us politically, I think that they would agree with us as to that we should have dialogue.
Yeah.
You know, yes. Civil dialogue.
Well, what was the talk that we heard last week, and the primary thing was, is that so? When yeah. he's accused of being so many different things, he didn't try to defend himself. He just said, is that so? And we need to be that way.
This talk was brought to you by the Cannondoe Zen Meditation Center in Mountain View, California. For more information or to support this podcast, go to cannondoe.org. That's K-A-N-N-O-N-D-O.org.